Before and during the war, the county courthouse is in the middle of this intersection. It is probably a log building raised above head height on brick pillars. A farmer's market is underneath. Above it is a simple tower with a bell. Early resistance to British policies occurred here, according to the North Carolina Gazette newspaper of November 20, 1765. Around 7 p.m. on Saturday, October 19, almost 500 people, a large percentage of the population, gather here. They hang an effigy of a failed former Prime Minister, Lord Bute, who remains a hated advisor to King George III and supports the Stamp Act, a tax on paper goods. They then burn the effigy in tar barrels. Next, they go to all the homes and force the men not already with them to come out and drink to liberty, property, and no stamp tax, followed by three huzzas after each. They disperse around midnight. The royal tax collector in North Carolina, William Houston, shows up in town on November 16 on personal business. Like all Sundays, it is a market day, and a crowd of 300 to 400 gathers. Drums beat, flags wave, the bell is rung, and Houston is brought here to the courthouse. The crowd demands to know if Houston is going to enforce the Stamp Act. His slippery answer would make modern politicians proud. He says he should be very sorry to execute any office disagreeable to the people of the province. They take him inside, where he resigns his office. His exit is more pleasant. The crowd carries him to each corner here in an armchair, giving him three huzzas at each, then further around town, and finally to his lodging. Thus it is fitting that protesters from across the region meet in the courthouse 9 years later, on Thursday, July 21, 1774, in the first attempt to organize resistance in North Carolina to a new set of British laws. Called the Coercive or Intolerable Acts, these are meant to punish Boston for the Boston Tea Party and other protests. The delegates decide to send a letter to other counties calling for representatives to a convention that would elect delegates to the First Continental Congress. They proclaim the cause of the town of Boston as the common cause of British America and as suffering in defense of the rights of the colonies in general. In November, local leaders meet at the courthouse as the Wilmington Committee of Safety for the first time to coordinate area responses to Parliament. A year later, an open declaration of resistance is written, or copied, inside. Details are fuzzy, including why this happened in Wilmington. On Tuesday, June 20, 1775, a small group from the Cross Creek area, now Fayetteville, create a document here later called the Liberty Point Resolves. The men pledge to defend their rights against every foe and support the Continental and Provincial Congresses, the latter being the new rebel legislature. Eventually, 55 property owners sign the resolves in Cross Creek. Most likely at the courthouse the next month, the Committee of Safety, now in effect the Patriot replacement for the local royal government, takes an action against liberty. It orders that all Africans and African Americans, free or enslaved, be disarmed, and creates patrols to enforce the order. Slaveholders were terrified of slave rebellions. The committee also takes harsh steps to enforce support for the growing cause of revolution. A Scottish visitor in 1775, Janet Shaw, reports that the committee's supporters threaten, "If you refuse, we are directly to cut up your corn, shoot your pigs, burn your houses, seize your slaves, and perhaps tar and feather yourself." She provides a vivid description of Wilmington at the time. "The people in town live decently, and though their houses are not spacious, they are in general very commodious and well furnished. This town lies low, but is not disagreeable. There is at each end of it an ascent, which is dignified with the title of the Hills. On them are some very good houses, and there almost all of my acquaintances are." Still, it wasn't her hometown of Edinburgh. She describes going to a ball, "dressed out in all my British airs with a high head and a hoop skirt, and trudging through the unpaved streets in embroidered shoes by the light of a lantern carried by an enslaved woman in rags." Please follow the walking instructions under Drama by the River and then click its audio clip.